It was nice. Didn't have the music, but it was a homey feel.
Yeah, I think we should go with that with every show.
It was like hee-haw. It was a little like hee-haw. I searched the world over and I found a bum through love. You had another and you was gone. Hello, this is Penn Jillette in Las Vegas, Nevada at Vintage Nude Studio. And sitting here with Michael Goudeau.
Good morning.
And how was your show last night? You're having shows, right?
Yeah, it was great. Were you there?
No, I wasn't.
Yeah, that's 700 shows without a drop.
Really?
Yeah, 700
doing very
now.
Well, yeah.
Although, magic sometimes has some problems.
We didn't mention this. Was there trouble last night?
Oh, man, I'm going to lose my job. It wasn't last
Not
night, actually.
Not this job.
Yeah.
You've
and this is the big
this
paying
job.
One. This is the big paying one. I should stick with this one. Yeah. Lance does this vanish from a hangman thing and then reappears coming down the chandelier.
He's up on a gallows
kid.
And he's lowered, yeah.
Yeah,
with a kid.
Well, he doesn't come down the chandelier with a kid, but then runs up onto the stage with the kid. But, vanished on the gallows and then nothing. Lance never came back. And there's kind of that moment where, on the speakers backstage, they go, Michael Goudeau, could you get up to the stage quickly, please? And so I'm in my underwear, throwing on my clothes as I run to the stage and grab some props and run back onto the stage to do a couple more minutes of juggling.
Was the chandelier caught on the ceiling?
It didn't come down at all, which was good, actually, because it has actually come down halfway once, and we had to get a ladder in the middle of the show. And get Lance down.
Hey, magic boy, have a ladder. We had a thing happen. Good morning, Lance.
Good morning,
we're talking Keller. About you right here. That's the thing about Lance. We're in a theater called the Penn and Teller Theater.
Yeah, thanks to Lance.
But it wasn't built as the Penn and Teller Theater.
Oh, okay, sure.
I mean, that's my point. You were going to say thanks to Lance because he was going to put us in his theater during breaks. Lance was very helpful. We got we got fired from another casino, maybe because there was some conflict with other entertainers.
Maybe not.
And we didn't have a place to play in Vegas. We're going to go back out and do the road,
mm-hmm.
which is no hardship, but it's nice to have a place in Vegas when we live here. And Lance offered to give us his down weeks, and I guess that made Vegas as a whole aware of us still working, wanting to work. And then they gave us our own theater at the Real, but they gave us.
I also think Lance was the first one to have the theater named after him in Vegas.
What about the Siegfried and Roy Theater?
No, that was after ours.
Really?
Lance was first.
To the Lance Burton Theater?
He was.
Well, of course he's the first to the Lance Burton Theater.
No, Siegfried and Roy didn't even consider calling theirs the Lance Burton Theater. No, he was the first one to have the theater in his name. Siegfried and Roy did that after Lance did it.
Really?
I believe that to be true.
Oh,
maybe
that's
Lance
great.
Burton will email us or call in and confirm that, but I believe that to be true.
That's pretty great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it wasn't the Frank Sinatra Theater.
No, there was not the Frank Sinatra Theater.
No, there was none of that stuff. Yeah,
it's a big deal.
That's pretty great.
Yeah.
But it was the Jubilee Theater, right? But that Jubilee isn't a person. Jubilee probably is a person, but not one that we know.
Not one that we know.
I mean, there's probably a Jubilee Jenkins somewhere. But we were given a theater that was somebody else's.
It was already going.
It was already going.
Pre-existing theater.
Changed the name. It was called the Samba.
Right.
That was back before the days of Lance Burton.
Yes, Samba was running it.
When all theaters were named after dances.
Okay. The Jubilee.
The Tango Room.
Uh-huh.
And we both took sips of our tea at the same time.
While we're in sync this morning.
That's a bad idea.
It's better.
So they gave us this theater that was built for something else. I don't even know for what.
Sure.
And we just went in there and did our show.
A little retrofit.
Right. Retrofit. But Lance Burton's theater was built for Lance Burton.
That is correct.
From scratch. So when you
I don't think they use scratch, but something.
A lot of scratch. And so every trapdoor in that stage.
There are no trapdoors in that stage.
There are trapdoors in that stage. Everything in that state was built for him. And we're trying to rebuild our theater so we could have one damn trapdoor. We got squat for trapdoors. which means we have to squat and sneak out. We don't go through a trap. We got nothing. And so when Lance first had a theater built for him, and how many, I mean, probably those guys in France, you know, in the early 20th century, that were when Magic was big for 15 right. minutes, those guys probably had the theaters designed for them. And, you I know, think. The guy that Teller wrote the book about, sure. David P. Abbott, performed only in his parlor. But his parlor he had all designed and all tricked out. And there's even guys that have close-up pads that are totally tricked out in electromagnet. But Teller and I, you know, we're carny trash. We've been schlepping around the world just doing our show on, we can't cut trap doors in stages. So when they first were building a stage for Lance, we were like, well, he can do anything. He can do anything. So we always felt a little bit like, you know,
a little envious, I'm little, sure.
Very envious okay. that Lance had a theater built for him, and he could just say, I want a trap door that fits exactly my hips. I want to slide through. I want a place to run to get to the other, you know, the other entrance place right. that's sure. all clear and well lit. I mean, I did this thing where I'm in a straitjacket and being hanged.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to run, you know, and I'm running backstage with guys holding flashlights, and it's not like the nice passageway that Lance has. He probably has like pictures on
we
the
wall. We have a luge. Yeah, you just, you know, right off you go. You hop onto it and,
Does he really have a luge?
No.
It'd be nice if he did, wouldn't it?
We do have some cool stuff,
so
but not a luge.
You can imagine the joy that just floods over me when I hear that his chandelier was caught.
Well, I had a really good time sitting on the stairs when he was stuck halfway up and they had to get the ladder because it meant I could heckle. You know, usually I have to go out there and juggle. But in this case, I got to come and sit down because really clearly no one is looking at the stage. So I just sit with a microphone and go, what are you doing? Hey, where's your magic now, my friend?
And you were paid by Lance to do that.
Yeah. Well, if we have to keep people laughing. That's a big part of the show.
It's a great, great business. It's a great business. But I love the fact. See, I don't have a theater. The theater is named after us, but it wasn't built for us. So we don't ever get stuck in our own chandelier. You know, tell them.
You would have had that option.
Of course.
You would have made that choice.
Of course. We would have made it so that at a random number generator and every, like, X number of shows, sometime, it just stopped. So we were stopped. You know, tell them. And this was really quite a problem. We were playing the Wiltern. I'm talking a lot of Wiltern stories in L.A. And you know, that's a big theater. It's like a couple thousand seats, maybe more. And we were doing very well there, so it's all sold out. We were getting a lot of, you know, celebrities coming. It was kind of a big deal. And at that time, we opened with Teller doing an upside down straitjacket escape
sure.
over spikes while I read Casey at the Bat as fast as I could, the poem. And it was racing, you know, racing against art was the kind of the premise of it. And we got ready to go on, right? And Teller, you know, I would call Mr. Escapo.
Right.
If you're starting with an escape. I was just going out to read a poem, but Teller was going to escape. So the image that you have of Teller is he's some sort of superhuman that can get out of anything. You know, we're playing the Houdini
right.
myth.
Right? Sure. So I know that to be true now that I work with Teller a lot. He is superhuman, but yep. that's another story.
Because you are paid well for BS.
I am, yes.
Yeah. You know, Emmy nominated.
Yeah.
And, we had these two huge dressing rooms, so and they're old. You know, it was built in whatever time they mm-hmm. built buildings. And I don't know, sometime.
The cavemen built it.
Something historic. And so I, you know, it's like 5 minutes before we go on, and they come up and go, you know, 5 minutes, Mr. Gillette. And I come out, and I start, you know, wandering down. Hello, Cleveland! You know, very Spinal Tappy.
Sure.
I'm going down to get behind the curtain, and stage manager comes to me and goes, Teller can't get out of his dressing room. There was this whole lock, right? So Teller had somehow screwed up the lock on the inside, and it couldn't be unlocked from the outside. So Teller was locked in his dressing room on the third floor of the Wiltern Theater with bars on the windows and stuff. He was imprisoned in the dressing room. And I did what any good partner would do, and I became hysterical. And I don't mean really, I don't mean like laughing really hard. I mean like probably dangerously hysterical. Like I was doubled over and like vomit coming out of my nose. And I just could not stop laughing. And Teller was, of course, getting mad inside the dressing room. Get me out! Get me out! And of course, when Teller gets mad, I'm so amused. I love nothing more on earth than Teller Man. When Teller is frustrated and really pissed and just like ready to just flip out, I am hysterical. So he's banging on the door and screaming, why can't somebody get me out of here? And it brings to mind, you know, Wilma! And it also brings to mind, the great escapo! He defies the straitjackets of the world to hold him, but he can't get out of his dressing room. And, you know, and Albert Brooks had done that thing where the, I guess we did it in high school, where he was supposed to wear a straitjacket escape and couldn't get out of his regular suit jacket.
Raider goat, yeah.
So I became hysterical. So they had to send a guy, they get a ladder and sent a guy in through the suspended ceiling to lower himself down, which is the way Houdini got out of the water tank.
Right, sure.
They snuck a guy in, lowered it, and then he did the escape. So now Teller's got somebody in the
suit. Somebody sit with him while they're locked in.
And now it's like it's 8 o'clock, you know, and most, you know, many performers go on like 20 minutes later, half hour later. They do drugs or something. But we're known for going on bang, you know, that, especially here in Vegas. I mean, 9 o'clock, it just bang, we're on. Just like the radio. We were so ready. And
same guy runs that show, isn't it?
Totally ready.
Same
boom,
tech guy.
Boom, boom, boom. So 8 o'clock comes around, and it's still he's still not out, okay? And then, finally, like at 8:03, which seems like an eternity, you know, when you're waiting to go on. At 8:03, the guy with his screwdrivers and all his monkey wrenches and stuff breaks out. And Teller comes out, and Teller's mood when he comes out is officious. Okay, I'm out now. Let's not screw around. You know, hey, we're already running late. Let's get going now. We're all together. We had some problems. Now we've solved them. Let's go, men. No, that strikes me funny. But it strikes me so funny that I'm incapacitated. Okay? So now the guy who's supposed to escape has been locked in the dressing room, and therefore the guy who talks is now helpless. And I can't talk, and I'm doubled over, and I can't even walk down to the stage. So now Teller's waiting for me, and as Teller gets more impatient, like, we're already late. You know? I'm dying. I'm just dying. And so we went up about 10 minutes late. And I'm sure when the lights came up and the curtain opened and my eyes were red and I was sniffling, I'm sure they said, well, you know, one of these showbiz guys have to... No, I've been fighting. I thought it would be drugs. You thought that maybe, oh, you know, they're partners.
Exactly.
So there was some sort of big lovers' quarrel backstage. Yeah, they could
That's
think
a reasonable
that.
Assumption.
They could think whatever they wanted. But what I'm saying is, if we put a chandelier in to the ceiling of our theater and then Teller was stuck in it, I wouldn't be sitting on the stairs with a microphone heckling him. I would be helpless. I mean, completely and utterly helpless. Oh, man, that's great. How often does Lance get stuck?
You know, it's twice a year. About. It's not very often.
And there's no, obviously there's no signs for it.
There's nothing.
Because
no.
I would cancel a show.
I mean, there was this time. I mean, the power lights were not on, and somehow we just didn't notice until the trick. Well, right, we didn't turn the trick on. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's so good. Lance, I hope you know the joy you brought. And do people like the show more, probably?
They do.
They like the show more. So, Lance, do that every night. Every night, get stuck in the chandelier. Let Godot do a few more minutes.
That seems like a good idea.
You know, last night, I did just found out last night from Jake and Jackie, who do a show.
Some other radio guys. Some other free FM partners.
Yeah, in New York. In New York, they're on from 11 to 3. Okay. Uh-huh. And we come on at 3. Did you know that? So we're also talking again at 3 in the morning, which means since we do a call-in show, we could actually call ourselves up when we're on the air. While we're on at 3 o'clock, 3 a.m. in New York, we could call in. And
I think you're misunderstanding this.
But Jake and Jackie were great. And I get on the phone, and, of course, the tech thing isn't working. So I call up. I call up, they have me on for like a minute and a half, then they lose my call. At least that's what they said.
Sure.
But I had to call like another 8 times. They didn't give me the hotline.
Like people do when they try to call us.
Exactly. So I got a little taste of my own medicine waiting on the phone going, you're about to talk to Free FM! Free FM! Free FM! Free FM! You know, so
right. I'm waiting for the bigger, louder half. Here he is.
Free FM! It's free! Leave a message what freedom means to you! Freedom means to me not waiting on a stupid toll-free number for 20 minutes for some jerk to talk to me on the air. That's what freedom means to me.
That's what freedom means to you? I thought it was that we weren't paying for it.
Oh, I see. That's a big part of what freedom
okay.
means. And we talk about whatever we want. But so Jake is this huge Penn and Teller fan, like embarrassing.
That's a nice thing.
Like he knew Teller's home address in Philadelphia, like where his parents lived. He knew the name of every book, and he went crazy for the Aristocrats. You know, he's just going like he saw
well,
it three times,
sure.
and Jackie just loved it, and she's carrying on, and she's really sounds cute. But, of course, you wonder, well, she's on the radio.
Like us, yeah.
Like us.
We
yeah.
sound so cute.
We sound very cute. Let, you see us, not so
the
much.
Fuzz, the stubby limbs. We're cute.
Yeah, very cute. Like Bruce Valanche falling down an escalator. That's how cute we are. And so they're having this great talk with us. And then Jake ends it by saying, and this drives me crazy. This is people who don't know how to compliment. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
This is how not to compliment. He goes, "Oh man, I love everything you do, man. I listen to the radio show. I can't wait for the Aristocrats DVD to come out. I've got all your books. I love Sock. I saw the show live. You're just great. I am such a nerd and a loser." So I try to lay on him a little information. I say, "Let's use some logic here. Here's the way you compliment." I said, "Jake and Jackie, you're two of the finest radio hosts I've ever heard, and I am a connoisseur of fine radio." That's the way you compliment,
yeah.
because once you put yourself down at the end
that's
of
right.
it.
That's right. I'm a pig, and I love your show.
This is
the best slop I ever had.
There's some weird sort of submission vibe that comes in on people. You know, they want to show respect. And part of the respect they want to show is cowering. And what you got to think about is when you're giving a compliment, you know, when Herbie Hancock or Richard Dawkins or Steve Martin comes to our show and says, "That was a good show,"
right.
even "That was an okay show," you're a mile high. You know,
yeah,
it just
sure.
it's the greatest thing in the world. And, you know, people aren't thinking. But, you know, I used to do that. I used to compliment people but go and, you know, I go, like I said, I was a big
what
fan
do I know?
Of Jonathan Richman and the Modern Lovers, you
sure,
know, and I go,
sure.
"Oh, man, you do the greatest show ever. But, you know, I'm just a big dork." Well, thanks, big dork. I'm glad you like our show.
I'm the king of the big dorks.
So now I try very much to not put myself down while complimenting. You know, Teller, when he's complimenting another magician, doesn't go, "You know, you're a fine escape artist, but of course, I can't get out of my dressing room." So it's genius to me that you can get out of your dressing room. But it was wonderful. Jake and Jackie were very kind and very nice. And in the evening, it finishes up their show and goes right into ours.
Wow.
Right into ours. And they seemed very nice. And I hope the show's going
well.
So
people think you ran from their studio into ours.
Yeah, sure. That's what they thought last night, I'm sure. And I was also, I did a lot of radio last night while you were vamping while Lance was stuck in his ceiling. I was on this show on NPR called Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Yeah.
Which is this live show they do. And they had a contest a while ago where they asked Paula Poundstone what my daughter's middle name was.
Okay.
And she missed it, bitch.
She missed it?
Yeah.
And I love love Paula.
Yeah, I love Paula, too. She's fabulous. But she happened to miss that question. My daughter's middle name.
Yeah.
Not that everybody in the world should know my daughter's middle name, but I was kind of hoping that Paula had. You know, I know her.
Yeah,
no. But
yeah.
she screwed that up. But I was on talking about Ben Franklin. That was my question.
Do you know his middle name?
I don't know. But I never claimed
to be... Because Ben Franklin's not more famous than your daughter.
But
what are you talking about?
I didn't know Ben Franklin, you know? I didn't know Ben Franklin. If I'd known Ben Franklin, I'd try to know his daughter. And I said, you know, and they said about my NPR essay about this, I believe.
Right.
They said that they had a lot of positive feedback on me saying I was an atheist on the air and so on. So now they're getting cocky. So during... the Ben Franklin question, they said, you know, what kind of swimmer was Ben Franklin? And I said, well, Ben Franklin didn't really have a swimmer's body. But, you know, Jesus had a swimmer's body, which is something a good friend of mine, great actor, David Packer, said. He just said out of the blue one day, "Jesus had a swimmer's body." And it made me laugh forever, so I said this.
Right.
Know, someone
true.
Else's joke, I said. And then all these, you know, they have like Roy Blount and those guys, columnists and stuff. It's a setup like the three guys, like the dating
sure,
game.
Sure, sure, I've seen it.
And they get really, they start going Jesus jokes. Boom, boom. So now we're on NPR and they're going like, you know, "He'd love to be swimmer, but he can't get into the water. He's walking, did he need to walk on the water? Walk on the water, blah, 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 blah. You know, Jesus is the goofball." And so now... NPR is getting really, really cocky in this atheist thing. You know, because free FM, we say whatever we want, but NPR, they're controlled by the government.
Yes.
They have to be very careful what they say. But not us. We're on free FM. You can't lock us in a dressing room because we are here saying whatever the hell we want, and we're going to do more of it. Lance was stuck in the ceiling. Oh, how great is that? Feel how excited I am. Oh,
good for the right home is a full-time job in itself. That's why Rich Kujak of Century 21 First Class makes it his job. Offering the most advanced search to find the ideal property, Rich Kujak puts years of experience to work so you buy at the right price. When searching for the right home, Rich Kujak is the one-call solution. One realtor working for you. And as a buyer's agent, there's absolutely no charge. It's free. It's the easy way to find the right home. Rich Kujak, Century 21 First Class. Each property search is customized just for you. There's no risk, no upfront money, and you cancel at any time. Call today for details on how to make your next search for real estate painless. 630-272-9309 or visit KujakHomes.com, a professional realtor serving all of Illinois. No more searching listings only to find a property has been sold, under contract, or off the market. Rich Kujak does all the work. Rich Kujak, 630-272-9309. 630-272-9309.
Someday you'll be old. You'll live in Florida and play bingo all wrinkly and saggy and pale. Your bones will turn brittle and you'll drive slowly. Some of you will lose your teeth and most of you will lose your hair. You'll be stiff, hard of hearing. You'll be old. And you know what? I'm insanely jealous.
Half of all new HIV infections are contracted by people under the age of 25. But it doesn't have to be that way. HIV is preventable. Learn more at knowhivaids.org.
I'm a hypocrite. No, I'm not a vegetarian that wears leather shoes. You see, I used to smoke pot. And when I found pot in my kid's room, I confronted him about it. It would have been easier to look the other way and not feel like a hypocrite. But I'm his dad, and he's not allowed to smoke pot, period. It might be hard, but to help your kid with their problem, first you have to get over yours.
Action. The anti-drug.
Hypocritical? Yeah, that's me.
For more information, visit theantidrug.com or call 1-800-788-2800. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for Drug Free America.
Free FM.
The Mike Jones Big Band
yes,
playing the Pendulette Radio theme there, and I am Pendulette, which is what you expect after the Pendulette Radio theme.
Conveniently
sometimes
enough.
You get it before the Pendulette Radio theme. Sitting here with Michael Goudeau, who has got to watch his boss, Lance Burton, stuck on the ceiling last night.
That's right.
You know, they yell to many celebrities, why don't you come out of the closet? To Lance, they yell, why don't you come out of the ceiling? You know, he's deeply ceilinged.
He's ceilinged.
He's so deeply in the ceiling. You know, if you just would come out of this. Maybe
well,
that's what...
The Queer Eye for Straight Guys, we talked about this. Wanted
well, that's
wanted
coming out of the
wanted
closet.
To help him redo his wardrobe.
But maybe the term for, you know, being an atheist but not admitting it should be being in the ceiling. He's in the ceiling. He's still
you
in
think
the...
that's it, do you?
I don't think that's it, but it was a shot. It was a shot.
Nice.
So I was talking about Ben Franklin last night, and I did a stupid thing, which it doesn't surprise you. How long have you known me?
Long enough to know that stupid things are the regular way things are done.
Well, I had these questions about Ben Franklin. Well, the first one I just aced instantly.
Sure.
I knew it right away. But the other two I screwed up.
Can you spell Ben? Did you miss it? Did you put two N's at the end?
And the other thing is you're playing for someone at home.
Sure.
Someone is playing at home.
Mm-hmm.
And if you win, they win. And what they win is one of their guys. I don't even know who
Carl,
it was.
Carl Castle's voice on their home answering machine.
You know a lot about this show.
I listen to the show.
Okay, good. And so you get that. So she lost. So I told her, and this was probably foolish. I told her on the air that she could write to Glenn in our office. And I would do her answering tape, or I would get anyone from the Aristocrats to do her answering tape.
Oh, man.
Like, I would get, like, you know, Kevin Pollak to do it.
Robin Williams is going to have to do her. Good luck. This is going to be fun.
Robin would do it, but I also pushed heavily for Kevin Pollak,
okay,
to do Christopher Walken, because I think that would be a really good answering tape to have.
That would.
And I also said you could get Gilbert. And she just has to run. Because I felt so guilty. You know, that's a horrible thing to do to someone is have them play for someone else. You know,
yeah,
that's same. Like if you torture somebody for their own information, it's much different than torturing them for stuff for their country.
That's
you know,
right.
If they owe it to someone else, it's hard. What do I know about torture? I'm just saying this. Like, you know, when you're tortured, when you're in Gitmo and you're a Muslim terrorist, when you're there, it's much easier. I'm talking like I know
sure.
I know nothing about. No one has ever. People have asked me how tricks were done. I say I'm not going to tell you, and they walk away.
No, they've never tortured you, have they?
Never any torture. Never any capture. They don't care.
Would you blab?
They don't care that way. In a second. In a second. You know, they just threaten to say the word hot lead enema. You know, just threaten to say
dentist.
That.
Dentist. I'll talk.
Whatever you want. Anything. Oh, it's safe. It's very, very safe. You know, I auditioned for, who was the director of Marathon Man?
Steve Kirkout.
No. The director of Marathon Man. You
Fred
know
Flintstone.
His name. No, no. You know that. Look it up. You have a commercial. You have a computer
okay,
in front of you.
Okay, you talk. I'll look
Marathon
it up.
Man. I auditioned for him for some movie he was doing about voodoo. Because when you're doing a movie about voodoo, the first name that comes to mind is
Pendulet.
Is Pendulet. And so he was, I think we were just mostly chatting. I think he thought when I walked in, I had zero chance of getting the part. But I walk in to the audition. I do the audition.
With
afterwards.
John Schlesinger.
John Schlesinger.
See, I just pulled that up, yeah.
Yeah, just had that in your mind.
William Goldman wrote it.
Yeah.
Cool.
It was a great movie, Marathon Man.
And William Goldman. I love William Goldman.
Yeah. What else do you write? Magic? Do you write Magic?
No.
The ventriloquist thing?
Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Oh, really?
The Princess Bride.
Oh. You know, I'm going to finish this story, then I'll tell you Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid story. But I auditioned for Schlesinger, and at the end of it, he says, because we dumped thousands of cockroaches on David Letterman twice, he says to me, so you did that cockroach thing on Letterman, and they were all hidden on your body. That was disgusting. How do you feel about cockroaches? And I said, the same way you feel about dentists. You know, Keller and I don't do anything in our show that it doesn't scare us to death, because that's the idea of drama, is to get stuff that means something, you know.
Right.
And when we went to Sundance last year, right at this time, a year ago today, I was at Sundance with the Aristocrats.
Right.
And I was, you know, we're going to be pimping it there, and it did very well there. But I met Robert Redford. You know, Sundance is named Sundance, that whole area in the festival, because of his role as Sundance, as a Sundance kid in Butch Cassidy. So I met Robert Redford, and I said, oh, you call this Sundance after your big movie role. my ranch is called Unnamed Security Guard 2, because that was my first part in a movie, Unnamed Security Guard 2. I was in a movie with Linda Blair called Savage Island.
That's what I heard, yes.
I was in it for like 15 seconds. And Linda Blair walks in, and I go, hey, you can't go there. And she shoots me in the head. She just boom, shoots me in the head.
I've always liked her.
Yeah.
She's cute.
She's very cute. Very
and shooting
cute.
You, that really, that's good.
Cute, stacked, and shooting me in the head. I specialized in the 80s. My specialty was getting shot in the head. I was in the Miami Vice Prodigal Son, the big, I guess it was season 2 opener. And what happened? I get shot in the head. After Crockett promises that he'll protect me, I'm shot in the head dead. We're going to take... should we take this call? Sure, let's take Adam on line 6. We got enough time for that.
I think we do.
Yeah, Adam, are you there?
Yeah, hi, Ben. How are you?
I'm doing very well, boss. How are you?
I'm fantastic.
Whoa.
Great show.
Thanks, boss. What's on your mind?
Yeah, you were talking before about getting stuck. I'm a sideshow, somewhat magic, but more sideshow. Sword swallowing, blockhead, you know, hammering the nail in the nose, animal trap routine.
Do you know all the people we know? I mean, do you know Todd Robbins and Doc Swan?
Todd was the one who taught me.
Oh, really?
Excellent.
Todd was. And you know Doc, too, right?
I met Doc. I don't know him personally.
Okay, but go on with your story. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I just don't want to ever mention sideshow without mentioning those two greats.
Todd Robbins, absolutely. I mean, the best there is out there now.
He sure
is. So anyway, I was doing a bar mitzvah, and had a couple of drinks beforehand with the whole show, got up to the straitjacket routine, and the father of the bar mitzvah kid straps me in, and there I am, and I'm struggling, and I mean, I finally made it, but it took like twice as long as it should have.
Do you use music?
My wife, what was that?
Do you use music?
Then I didn't know I do. I've got a great piece by the Ray McVay Sound. It's, you know, total instrumental, real, you know, nice tension builder.
It goes on a long time in case you don't make it, right?
I've never had that problem. So, you know, you learn the lesson not to have a couple of drinks before you do a show.
Well, also, you know, you were hired for a bar mitzvah. You want to get his money's worth. It's sure, strap you in pretty
exactly
tightly.
And, you know, I mean, my wife is at the bar mitzvah, and she was, you know, after the show, she came over and she says, I didn't think you were getting out of that. I said, look, you know, you're in. So I've now built the routine. As they're strapping me in, I said, look, I swallow swords. If I hurt myself, well, obviously I'd get a little audience sympathy. I have it now a little too far in and hits the brain. Well, you'll probably feel bad for me. But getting in a straitjacket and not being able to get out in front of an audience, now you just look like a jerk.
But let me ask you this, boss. Have you ever been locked in your dressing room when I'm able to get out?
I've never been locked in a dressing room.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I rest my case. Thank you very much, Adam. You haven't been stuck in the ceiling either, have you, Adam?
No. I couldn't even get up there if I wanted to.
What's your full name, Adam, in case people want to see you? I mean, I love the sideshow stuff, and too few people do it. What's your name?
Adam Rinn. Adam the First Real Man.
Adam the First Real Man.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a great name. And you work like bar mitzvahs. Where are you out of? What city?
Out of New York.
Cool. Do you ever work Monday Night Magic down there?
No, you know, I emailed them a while back, haven't heard back from them. I'll shoot them out another email.
Yeah, you better, because, you know, Todd Robbins and Jamie Ian Swiss run this thing called Monday Night Magic in New York, and it's really boss. And every week they have different magicians, and you should be one of them, man. They let sideshow guys in there because Todd runs it. So go in there, talk to your old teacher, Todd. Lay it on him. Work Monday Night Magic. Go. Thanks a lot, Adam.
All right, thanks. Good talking to you, Ted.
Nice talking to you.
Thanks so much, Adam. Stuck in a straitjacket. I don't think Teller ever had that problem.
Not stuck in the straitjacket, no?
I think we always got out of a straitjacket, okay. You know, we did a gag where, I was being put in a straitjacket at the Hollywood Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And I made a mistake. We had the whole orchestra there. And the gag was they were going to play a piece of music, Pierre Gint and the whole The Mountain King. And then we would escape in time to play it, play the ending on bass and Teller plays keyboard. So it's racing against the music. It's the same gag as Casey at the Bat, just done with a full symphony.
Right.
And I had the percussionist, which is what they call drummers when they're at the Hollywood Bowl. Even when the Beatles played the Hollywood Bowl, Ringo was a percussionist.
Really?
For that one day, yeah. And, or the 2 days, whenever they played. I don't want to be busted on not knowing how many times the Beatles played the Hollywood Bowl. I had a percussionist timing the straitjacket, and he broke the strap. So I'm on stage, Hollywood Bowl, a lot of people watching, and the problem was not that I couldn't get out of the straitjacket. The problem
was
I couldn't get into the straitjacket. So we're just trying to tell you, you know, you think you have problems at your job, and you think if you're a magician
everybody
or a juggler,
a bad day.
Everybody has a bad day, and when your bad day happens, you better hope it doesn't happen on stage at the Hollywood Bowl. This is Penn Jillette. We'll be back with a whole lot more of exactly what we're doing now. It's always the same stuff we do, you know. It's the same stuff. Razor's edge, perfect, sharp, dead on. Penn Jillette here with Michael Godeau, the lovely and talented Michael Godeau.
Thank you, sir.
Who's boogieing across the table from me, dancing to the jazz in an inappropriate way.
Thank you.
You know, our manager, Spicoli, whose real name is Pete Golden, but I call him Spicoli because he's a surfer guy.
Right,
he might as well be Spicoli. We mentioned, like, what, one or two women at all by name in the first two parts of the show. And, of course, we get a message instantly from Spicoli. Golden writes it right away.
He's paying attention. That's
to
good.
Say that he had sex on the beach with one of the women we mentioned.
Was there permission to say that on the air?
No, I didn't say who it was. And everybody knows that Spicoli has sex with everyone.
Okay.
You know, it's very hard to have a conversation. You know, you say, you know, I used to think Golda Meir did pretty well. And he goes, I had her.
Man.
I had her back when she was good. You know, he mentioned anything. Oh, you know, the Supreme Court. I had two of them.
Yeah.
You know, he's right there on
under the road.
And he's always got a story. And anybody you mention, you know, Brad Pitt. Well, he and I kind of shared it. You know,
it hasn't occurred to you that he might be lying about these things?
Not a chance.
Not a chance.
Not
okay.
a chance he's lying because I think about it late at night later. And if he's lying, that takes some of the... It's like, you know, it's like the porno sites where they just pick up women at bus stops and have sex with them. I have a friend who told a friend of his that those were fake, you know, that they'd say, why don't you wait at the bus stop, then I'll come and pick you up and we'll strip and have sex in the van.
Right.
And the guy was completely freaked out and heartbroken. No, that happens. That happens. You can pull up to a bus stop in a van, and people will have sex with you. Maybe. You know, not if you look
That's
like...
That's why I quit taking the bus.
Is it something you signed to take the bus?
There's
a little sign-up sheet that says, if anyone pulls up in a van before the bus gets here, I will have sex with
you. Yeah, if you buy the monthly pass on the back of that.
Goes right with it. You just click the whole thing. Anyway, I love... That's one of the reasons that we retain Spicoli. The reason we keep him on retainer. We have Pete Golden because I want to hear sex stories about every name I mention. You know, you're talking about Nobel Prize. You know, well, Madame Curie was the first. Madame Curie, Maui, 72.
Madame.
Oh, Madame. Yeah. They in a leather bustier, and she, we did some B&D play on the beach. It was a wonderful thing. Anybody, you know?
A little bit of radon. It was great. That woman glowed in the dark.
Oh, She makes you all glow. And I got some, you know, there's this Al-Qaeda tape that came through.
Sure.
And, you know, I mean, what, this is just pure evil. And it actually makes me very patriotic. Not because I support Bush's, policies, because I don't.
Right.
But I'm very patriotic to think that I live in a country where an enemy, a clear enemy who's done us this much damage, can send a message to the American people.
Right. And the leader of the enemy, and we're playing it.
They get it. We play it. I mean, that is pure freedom of speech. That is pure freedom, is that give the people all the information. And, of course, he's talking in a weird voice now. Because Tom Waits, he's afraid he'll sue him. Because, you know, if he goes, oh, well, we're going to have another attack on the... That was my Tom Waits. I'm going to get
sounded like your Yosemite Sam.
Oh! But Tom is a great guy, and they rip off his voice so much, and he sues them, and that's probably good. But the next Al-Qaeda thing is going to be coming through a podcast.
Really?
Because they're changing their name to I-Qaeda.
You want to seem hip. Try to get the young folks in on their side.
That's what they're trying to do. Just an evil whack job. You know, and when you belong to a religion, and there's lots of them, when you belong to a religion that says kill everybody else that's not in the religion, I think we have to speak up and say that's not a religion of love. But I kind of, when they do the podcast, and there's a lot of freedom stuff in the news. I mean, it's horrible to say. I mean, I want there to be no Osama bin Laden, no Al-Qaeda, no evil people in the world. But the fact that we live in a country where we trust people so much, and we trust freedom so much, that we'll play anything. You know, you can hear the American Nazi Party, you can hear the Klan. That is just, you know, it's like, you know, Fahrenheit 9/11. You know,
sure.
I really hated that movie. Hated it, loathed it,
really?
Thought it helped Bush get elected, really did not like it, did not like the tactics,
right.
Nothing about it. Every time I drove by the theater, which I did on the way to work, that was playing Fahrenheit 9/11, I would get a little teary-eyed. I'm not, there's no joke there, because we live in a country that a movie can come out that hates the president, says it hates the president, trashes the president and the whole administration, and can make a kachillion dollars and be celebrated. That's pretty cool.
That's right. Really,
you know, there haven't been many countries on the face of the earth where you could come out and say, I hate the president, everything he's doing is wrong, and you get a gold record. I
mean, it's
pretty great. Regardless of who the president is or regardless of what you're saying, I'm talking about the very top level of pure and utter freedom. And speaking of pure and utter freedom, the Justice Department has subpoenaed Google. You know, and if you want to talk about a cool company, Google, I think, and I want to say, you know, we have to do disclaimers here, this plugola. I have a very good dear friend who works at Google, but he works in the bowels of Google, really making it work. Nothing to do with sales. And Google has never given me jack. They have given me nothing.
I get
nothing.
Maybe
from
they
Google.
Send us shirts.
Actually, that now that you mentioned it, that isn't true.
He did.
Rob did give me a shirt.
Oh, you were going down ethics radio violation.
I got a shirt. So I'm going to say nice stuff about Google, but I don't think, you know, they need to bribe you to say that. I think that the internet and how Google has assembled that information is as big as the Gutenberg press, and the second thing printed on the Gutenberg press was pornography. Sex drives all new technology. It really does. It's very important. And so sex gives you the money on the internet to do the really important stuff.
Right.
So the government, which, you know, is the freest country that ever existed on the planet, greatest country, they can't monkey with it like this. They're subpoenaing Google to see what their people were searching for.
A whole week
so that
of
they
Google searches. Can you load it onto a truck and bring it in? What are you talking about?
Hundreds of searches.
Hundreds?
There are hundreds of searches
hundreds
done on
from
Google.
Me.
And so Google, I guess they, you know, they said no. You know, Yahoo and the
Yay,
other ones
Google.
Just went, you know, okay, here you go, have everything.
Yahoo. Well, the name is Yahoo.
We're bending over, we're grabbing our, you know, grabbing our ankles, go ahead, take whatever you want. And Google said, no, we're not doing it, because their motto is, do no evil.
Right, sure.
But, of course, the Justice Department also has a motto, which is, then let us. We're very fine doing evil. That's what we do. That's what we do. And another Google thing, this is another Google joke. This is a Google joke from Robbie Libin,
right,
who works at the Benadella Show and is a one of my oldest friends. I mean, except for Teller, I guess, my oldest friend now.
Uh-huh.
Mark Garland is also an old friend who is the, I guess he's the AD on Law and Order or something. But anyway, really good friends of mine. But he writes in that, I'm going to read exactly what he wrote to me in an email because it's so funny. President Bush plans to visit the National Security Agency's spy center this week. Citing concerns about terrorist attack, he refused to reveal the location of the ultra-secret organization, which Google lists as being 9800 Savage Road in Fort George Meade, Maryland.
Yeah, maps.google.com. You can get a photo of it from space.
Where's the NSA? With Bush's car parked. Yeah, Bush's. Oh, you can read the license plate on Bush's car. It says, what is Bush's car's license plate? The Air Force One is the airplane. What's the license plate? Go-kart one, good old boy one, yee-haw, is that what it says?
Doggone.
Yeah, doggone. And so Robbie made me laugh a lot with that. But Google, you know, Google, and when Scientology, you know, came down on him and said that they shouldn't have anti-Scientology sites listed when you search for Scientology, they fought that too. You know, they have this Nicholas Negroponte, who's the head of the media lab at MIT, mm-hmm. wrote a book in 1990 called Being Digital, which
yeah.
I happen to be the one who read on tape. I read the book on tape, which is how you get me to read a book. You hire me to read it on tape.
You?
But I'd already read it. And he has this sentence in there. He has this sentence that I believe is one of the most important scientific and political sentences of our lifetime. And that is, bits is bits. That's it. Bits is bits. And at the time he said that, in the late 80s, you
mm-hmm.
know, you didn't really know what it meant. You didn't really know that it meant that the Zapruder film and Enema Nurses in Bondage and U2 are all the same exact thing. And when you do a string in Google, they're very careful that it means nothing to them. They're not doing any filtering. It's all done by algorithms. Their news is done that way. And that's the way it should be. Every single person has equal access
sure.
to the web. And you had someone write in about the aristocrats that I want to talk about here.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
I'm not going to be pimping the aristocrats. You know, I'm not going to be, you know, Letterman held up the aristocrats with Bob Saget. He held up our cover, said nothing bad about the cover, said nice things
very
about our movie.
Of him.
So now I don't have to do any more pimping on
sure.
the radio show.
Sure. This is from Ryan.
Okay,
Ryan
don't say last names anymore.
All right, just Ryan.
I get creeped out by that.
Okay.
I didn't
Ryan.
Say last names for who Spicoli had sex with.
That's good.
Yes, I did. Gold in my ear, right?
I am not going into a big moral discussion of whether you should be able to make to own information once you make it public.
You want to bet whether I will?
However, I will say that it is a pointless endeavor on account that it is not possible to enforce. I am currently downloading your movie, The Aristocrats.
Oh, man.
I want to personally thank you for making the movie. I give this thanks out of generosity, not out of obligation. The current state of the Internet makes it impossible to enforce copyright laws. Therefore, any attempt to have such laws is a waste of resources.
Yeah, you know, I might agree that having the laws
sure.
is a waste of resources, but the fact that that negates the moral argument is insane. There are many, many things that are legal that I don't do because they are immoral.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it's very easy.
It cost your money and time to make this, and would you do that for free? Maybe.
Right. But I'm going to a higher level on this. I'm just saying the idea that because a law is unenforceable, it cannot be a moral law. It's like those religious people who say, you know, if it weren't for God's law, I would rape and murder. It's only God. And you go, okay, could I please get away from you? I mean, in case all of a sudden God's law, in case you see the truth and realize there's no God, you immediately start raping and killing. There is a morality. A morality should exist outside the law and outside of religion. There are social, moral conventions and built-in hardwire things in chimpanzees for certain kinds of altruism and helping the pod and working along, and we should have those. You can feel affection and you can feel you're doing stuff morally right, even living with no government and no religion. You can do what's right. So the fact that he says we can't enforce him not downloading the Aristocrats, which I guess I can't if he's downloading it right now, although he's probably got the copy we put on there as a dummy with all the glitches in it. And we
We have his email address. So yeah.
And we also have a copy of the Aristocrats that's up that has some really nasty viruses in it. Because the law can't stop us from putting nasty viruses into they can't. It's completely unenforceable. Just because the law, I'm not going to get a big moral discussion with you, Joe Bob. I'm not going to, Ryan. I'm not getting a big moral discussion with you, but it is unenforceable to stop me from putting in deep, horrible viruses in the download you're getting of my movie that I made with my sweat and my love and my money for you. So, Ryan, enjoy the movie for the 15 hours you'll have it before all hell breaks loose on your laptop.
And I know, give it to your friends.
Don't copy it over to your friends. I'm warning you. No, but that's the point. If you're not following morality, the other side may not follow morality either. And that's the reason that makes it so beautiful to live and so wonderful, is a concern for other people and not doing things wrong even when you won't get caught.
You think treat people as you'd like to be treated is a good idea?
As they would like to be treated is a good idea.
Okay.
Don't treat people like you want to be treated, because then it's solipsistic, and my mother liked to be left alone when she was sick, and I want to be babied. So, you know, you can't do that, but you can do part of it. This is Penn Jillette taking the moral high road, like I always try to do here in Las Vegas with Michael Goudeau. We'll see you on Monday with more of this wonderful stuff. Ryan, you rat bastard, choke on your own vomit. Choke on someone else's vomit.
We're not
like
sending him a DVD.
Says.
He asked me, he
no
said this
way.
Our address.
No
he
way.
He said this is address.
Yeah. We know people.